The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, peteevans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. So we're going to continue with the vaccination story with Dr. McCullough. You were talking about that you've had Moderna and Pfizer, so you have a lot of experience now in the United States.
Yes, you know, as an internist and cardiologist and epidemiologist, I'm the editor of two major journals, the president of a major medical society. We have experience with, certainly with drugs and devices and data, as well as vaccines, although vaccines are not my research area. I know there's 70 vaccines or so on the U.S. market, different brands for different diseases. I have had all the vaccines. 98% of Americans take all the vaccines. We have vaccines that are mandated for our work in the hospital. And I had two vaccines this year, actually. So we're familiar with them. And the listeners should understand that vaccines have one of two approaches or three approaches. They either give a protein, which is inactive, like a tetanus protein, and we respond to it to get immune, or we give a dead virus, so we can give inactivated flu vaccine as an example, or we can give a live attenuated virus or a virus that's been disabled, but it's still alive. That would be like the shingles vaccine. So that's the idea, that we inject these into the body and the body forms an immune reaction to them. But we know that what we inject itself cannot do damage to the body. It's impossible. All the vaccines I mentioned, it is impossible for damage to be done to the body. The immune system reacts to it. And sometimes the immune system can go crazy and cause a very rare reaction, a vaccine reaction. But we know that the injected material cannot cause damage. With COVID-19, the disturbing thing is that SARS-CoV-2, the virus, looks like it's a product of bioterrorism research in Wuhan, China. And the details of this are being uncovered with a variety of investigations. Looks like the U.S. was involved, the Chinese are involved, the Chinese military involved, the U.S. National Institutes of Health. All this is coming out through investigations here in the United States. But the coronavirus is part of a family of viruses that causes the common cold. It shouldn't cause blood clotting or death. But there was a modification to the virus where the spike or the spine of the virus that you see on top of the ball was modified. And it was modified to become more contagious and to actually promote blood clotting, whether it was intentional or unintentional. That's actually what made it a lethal problem. And so vaccines all of them so far, Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, and AstraZeneca, they all trick the body into producing the spine, the spike protein. So for the first time in vaccination history, we are genetically tricking the human body to produce the spike protein in an uncontrolled manner without really any regulation on this, and then let the spike protein circulate in the bloodstream unimpeded, where it can go out and cause damage to the body. And so all of this basically has been put together over the last couple of weeks. This is new information. We were originally thinking that the vaccine stayed in the arm, it didn't distribute, and we just formed in a reaction to it. That's what the thought was. Mm-mm. These vaccines distribute everywhere in the body. The body makes spike protein. It looks in large amounts. Some people probably too much and too long. And the spike protein itself basically drives organ damage, blood clotting, and directly causes death. And what we've witnessed in the United States and worldwide is unprecedented. We have more vaccine deaths and hospitalizations in catastrophic events than any set of vaccines in human history by a mile. It's not even close. And so, you know, everybody should be concerned about vaccine safety. I wrote an op-ed last summer in The Hill, and it was called The Great Gamble of the COVID-19 Vaccine Development Program. And what the gamble was, is we took all of our marbles and we put them on the vaccine. We didn't invest in early treatment. We really didn't even invest in late treatment. We didn't invest really in any innovation outside of all efforts on the vaccine. And the vaccine development program wasn't for a live attenuated virus or an inactive antigen. It was actually for this kind of new dangerous technology, this messenger RNA or adenoviral genetic technology, to try to trick the body into producing the dangerous Wuhan spike protein, the product of bioterrorism. It's almost as if this was a bioterrorism plot, we started out on the first segment saying this is like a science fiction movie. Well, if the first phase of bioterrorism was the respiratory illness to spread over the world and create fear and to cause death among the frail and the elderly and put everybody else in fear, and that was the first wave of bioterrorism, the second wave now is bioterrorism via injection, is that if we could create an environment where everyone would develop such a fervor and such a hubris to vaccinate one another and to give each person a test run of bioterrorism or exposure to the spike protein with the hope that we would form immunity to it. And that is kind of launching the great experiment of the COVID-19 vaccine development program, which is investigational all over the world. The numbers are stunning. To give you an idea, Pete, in the United States, if we take all 72 vaccines per year, and we look at the reports that come in ambiently into the safety database over 30 days after vaccination, the number of deaths all vaccines reported across many, many hundreds of millions of shots is between 150 and 200. You know, it'll happen in a huge population. We are at, as we sit here today in the United States, over 5,000 deaths reported. We're at 15,000 hospitalizations, thousands. We had 300,000 safety reports of paralysis, neurologic injury, heart attack, stroke, abortions, miscarriages, blood clots. I mean, it's endless. Europe has logged over 10.
Somebody doesn't want us recording this. There we go. I've got you back. Somebody doesn't want us recording this. We're still recording, so we're up to Europe.
In Europe, there's been over 10,000 deaths, which is unprecedented. Now in the United States, we have just had a rash of cases of myocarditis or heart damage directly due to the vaccine in young people. We have cases that came out of California, Connecticut, the U.S. military. A rash of cases came out of Israel. And it's become apparent as the vaccination program has moved to younger people, we've seen now the expression of what the spike protein can do. When young people get the natural virus, they fight it off easily. It doesn't cause any problems. They just, you know, it's like a common cold or less. But when we trick the body into making the spike protein, we bypass all the natural defense mechanisms of the body, the lymphoid tissue in the nose and mouth area, the natural mucous membranes. When we bypass that and we give a mainline of genetic material that causes the body to make the spike protein, boy, are we seeing damage. And so these cases of myocarditis caused US FDA 2 days ago to have an emergency meeting. I attended online. It was clear they didn't have a handle on what was going on. We know that 90% of the kids were in the hospital. We don't know the extent of the heart damage. We know 20% had reduced heart pumping function. We don't know what level of medications were needed, how many died or survived. And now there's an emergency meeting on June 18th by the Centers for Disease Control. And literally what we've had in the last week is calls for the entire vaccine program to be stopped in the United States by the Association of American Frontline Doctors. Last night on national TV, I told Americans, at least let's not bring our kids under age 30 in for vaccination. I was very clear with the American public last night on a presentation over a major TV network that was invited. We've had calls from the evidence-based consulting group led by Dr. Tess Lowry in the UK. She concluded this week that the vaccines were not safe enough for human use and it should be shut down in the UK. We've already had calls out of France and Israel by other groups to go ahead and shut down the vaccine program. There is a paper that has been submitted to major journals from 17 countries, 57 authors. The first author is Bruno, South America, Europe, North America represented, again, stating that if the vaccine programs can't get a handle on safety, meaning they don't have any external critical event committee, data safety monitoring board, or ethics committees, they don't have the fundamental structures that a large research program should have. If they can't get it quickly together or get these structures together, they should shut down the program. The vaccine is simply not safe in its current administrations across populations.
Well, it seems like science fiction is turning into a horror film. But what is the likelihood of that happening for the FDA or the CDC, for instance, to say, okay, let's put a halt onto this? We've seen over the last year the fear, the suppression of expression, and common sense seems to have gone out the window for a lot of people and a lot of organizations and a lot of governments. What would it take for the FDA or any of these regulatory bodies to say, okay, we need to stop this and we need to stop this now?
I'd say the will of the people. We have seen basically the vaccine become propagandized. Propagandized meaning that is advertised morning, noon, and night. Americans have been told, and Australians, people all over the world, the only solution for this problem is the vaccine. And it should be common sense that a vaccine is not treatment. Vaccine doesn't help sick people get better. And what we've learned is that vaccine doesn't even prevent COVID-19 very well. In the United States, we had 10,000 bona fide breakthrough cases that were reported through different reporting agencies to the CDC. They were completely overwhelmed. They were real cases. 9% had to be hospitalized, 3% died. And the CDC basically said, gave up. We're not going to even, report these anymore. We can't possibly handle the flood of cases.
So, and they were fully vaccinated.
Fully vaccinated. So we got a sense basically by the end of May, the vaccine's not working. Certainly doesn't protect people 100%. And we had seen this in our clinical practice. So I've seen many cases of fully vaccinated people get COVID like as if they never had the vaccine. So Americans have gotten a sense from our agency that A, the vaccine doesn't work, and that B, it's not safe, or it's certainly not safe as where we are now. Now, in my practice, 70% of my patients have been vaccinated, but that was all December, January, and February before all the safety data came out. I can't ethically recommend it broadly now. I think on a case-by-case basis, I may be able to find a conversation with a patient where they would really need it and somehow they didn't get into the program. I know Germany is very similar. I had a conference call with them yesterday. Germany is at about 18% of the population vaccinated. And they've come out and said, listen, only young people under extreme circumstances would they get a vaccine. Maybe a child with cystic fibrosis or some pulmonary impairment. Otherwise, leave the kids alone. I think you're going to see world sentiment change towards the vaccine pretty quickly. Australia is interesting. I was checking out Australia's epidemic curve, and Australia did have a peak in cases, never really been affected greatly, but your peak of new cases looked like it was back in August, and your curves have been very low, and the rates of COVID-19 just have not been high for months. And so I don't know how to interpret Australia outside of being potentially a susceptible pocket. Now, fortunately, it's a huge country, huge continent. You guys are spread out, but I know you got densely populated areas in Sydney and Melbourne, and I've been to Australia a few times. So I know how you guys live. Australia is actually a lot like Texas. If you were to go down to Adelaide, since that would kind of be like, that would be like Amarillo, Texas or Dallas. We don't have anything like Melbourne, I can tell you that much, or Sydney. But I don't know what to tell you in Australia. I know Australia's been looking at this and saying, you know what, the vaccine's going to save Australia. But Australia, of interest, had some real missteps in vaccine development. So one of the parts of the bioterrorism development of the spike protein was the insertion of four segments of code that code for the human immunodeficiency virus, HIV or AIDS. So the spike protein has some code and some expression of protein for AIDS. Now, it doesn't cause AIDS, but it explains why the lymphocyte count is low as opposed to being high. When we first saw this, I said, boy, it almost looks like an AIDS patient coming in, because there's artificially some HIV code in the spike protein genetic material that codes for it. And so the first Australian vaccine program exposed some of those epitopes or some of those proteins for the human body to respond to. And 100% of Australians in that first vaccine program developed antibodies to HIV. They became HIV positive without really having HIV. And so that came out of Australia. It was widely on the internet. In America, we knew about it. But what Australians and Americans should know is that by December 10th, there was an organized program to squash information on the vaccine that was negative, or that was about safety, or about fair balance. And so to this day, some people in Australia don't know the first Australian vaccine turned people HIV positive. It was squashed by what's called the Trusted News Initiative, TNI. And the Trusted News Initiative was all the media banding together, including the Australian media, to say, listen, vaccine hesitancy is a bad thing. The only way out of this is the vaccine. We've picked one approach, and that's all we're going to do is vaccinate. We're going to vaccinate our way out of this problem. So we cannot allow any negative information to people. So it's a bit patronizing to say that, listen, this is good for you, and we're not going to let you see anything else. Sorry. This vaccine is good for you. Take it and don't ask any questions, because you're not going to see any bit of information on safety or fair balance. So the Trusted News Initiative came out, and it's very overt. And we have YouTube and Twitter, and they've basically said, listen, you say one bad word about the vaccine, and a bad word can just be presenting safety data, they're going to go ahead and scrub you off of YouTube and Twitter. It was forbidden anywhere to say a bad word about the vaccine or even present fair balance safety. In the US FDA approval process, we demand fair balance. So we have commercials on TV that advertise a drug, and then it'll say, warning, may cause this, warning. That's called fair balance. But under the emergency use authorization process, the drugs aren't fully approved, so there's no fair balance needed. And with the Trusted News Initiative that was agreed upon, there's actually going to be no information to safety getting out to people. So a podcast like this, where Dr. McCullough reads the safety data, 5,000 eye-popping deaths, it should be less than 200, 5,000. This vaccine is a killer. It is an absolute killer. And so it is wave two of bioterrorism. And so the biggest concern in Australia right now is not the respiratory virus. The biggest concern is the vaccine. And what do you do with the vaccine? Do you line up and take it? Do you wait and see what happens? Is the government going to mitigate risk? Is there going to be some redevelopment? If you take the vaccine, are you committed to taking boosters? Because we know each time that one takes a shot, that spike protein amplifies even more. So it's known from shot one to shot two of Moderna or Pfizer, for instance, it's 80 to 100 times worse on shot two.
Well, the statistics here in Australia, I think at the moment, is 2%, 2 to 3% of the population only has been fully vaccinated. It's a very small number. It's a very small number of who has had the second shot. But what I found fascinating is yesterday, the G7 meeting over in Cornwall in the United Kingdom, the G7 leaders have made an announcement and they want to be able to produce a vaccine for the next pandemic within 100 days. They thought that this year was too long. So they've all agreed in theory or in practice that next time a pandemic appears, we will have the ability to produce, or they want to produce, a vaccine for the next pandemic within 100 days. So I don't know whether they've taken any of this information on board seriously. And you can check that out because that's not science fiction. That's factual of what just in the last 12 hours, that's the news. My question to you is, we're seeing, I guess, the short-term side effects of these vaccines that you talk about for COVID. What are your thoughts about long-term, or is stuff only going to go wrong? Is your body only going to react in that first two-week period? And then if you get through that 2 weeks, are you hunky-dory for the rest of your life? I know it might be a hypothetical question, but your theory.
For the vaccine stakeholders, some people are calling them the vaccine cartel or the vaccine cabal. The vaccine stakeholders appear to be the vaccine manufacturers, the World Health Organization, Gavi, the Gates Foundation, and the regulatory agencies, the TGA, FDA, CDC, Health Canada, the European Medical Association, MHRA. They seem to be kind of all together on this vaccine development issue. And so individuals who take the vaccine should know that the current sets of vaccines, and certainly the one you just mentioned, the 100-day vaccine, it will not be tested to see if it causes cancer. It won't be tested to see if the vaccine causes birth defects. It won't be tested to see if the vaccine causes changes in the human genome, or it was called genotoxicity. And it certainly won't be tested to see if it actually is safe short term. We're finding out it's not safe short term. And then it certainly won't be tested to see if it actually has a long-acting effect. So this is basically a no-win situation. This short-term vaccine development program is nothing short of a disaster. There's just nothing good about it. I've told you, it looks like it doesn't work. The short-term risk of death and hospitalization is astronomical. The blood clotting and neurologic damage, astronomical. And it looks like it's the gift that keeps giving. There is an autopsy report that just came out of Germany where there was a gentleman in his 80s. He took vaccine number one. He took the second shot. He's fully vaccinated. He develops COVID-19, just like I told you. He doesn't seem to stop the infection. He gets COVID-19, and then he gets admitted to the hospital. He aspirates and looks like he dies of the aspiration pneumonia. But when they did the autopsy, they basically found that it was everywhere in the body. That, in fact, the vaccine distributes everywhere, into the brain, everywhere. And the great concern here is that we just don't know what we're doing. We've never used messenger RNA or adenoviral DNA like this ever. This is a giant human experiment. A recent paper suggested a strong interaction between the messenger RNA products, Pfizer, Moderna, and the BRCA gene and the P53 gene. Those are both tumor suppressor genes, otherwise known as cancer genes. Oh, great. Now that these interact with these cancer genes, are we going to see a rash in the future of breast cancer or solid organ tumors? Nobody knows because they haven't gone through the testing to see if they're safe. They are advocating that pregnant women and women of childbearing potential take the vaccine, even though they're excluded from the regulatory trials. Well, that's a recipe for disaster. We don't know if these vaccines cause birth defects or not. We're seeing very high rates of miscarriages and spontaneous abortions and what's called fetal wastage. just doesn't seem to be anything that looks good coming out of these vaccines. And then on top of that, we don't know if they have any duration of protection. The clinical trials are only 2 months long. Now, the vaccine stakeholders have kind of tipped their hand on this. They said, listen, we don't think these are going to work. So we're certainly not going to last very long. So now you need a booster. So now you're going to be caught in terms of getting a booster update. So people who are vaccinated in the spring, they're already being told that they're going to have to take a booster in the fall. So if the future is vaccination, if that's going to be the holy grail to human health, boy, these vaccine stakeholders better get on their A game because they're out of the blocks right now with some real losers. This is bad when you have leading doctors in the world calling like crazy to say shut down the program. We should be cheering this on. We should be cheering everybody to line up and get the vaccine. We should be saying, listen, this is great. Go ahead and do it. This is good for America. It's good for Australia. It's good for the world. Get your vaccine. Get your vaccine. We should be doing that. But we're not. We're actually alarmed at what we're seeing.
Fast forward a couple of years, or end of this year, next year?
I think we're in a dark time in the world right now. We started out with the allegory, I guess, of the science fiction movie. I think this is a science fiction movie where there's just chapter after chapter. Chapter one was the development of a bioterrorism weapon, and it sneaks out of a lab in Wuhan, spreads across the world. Virus hunts down pockets of susceptibility. You're sitting in, I think, a pocket of susceptibility. I'm sitting in a pocket where the virus has already done its damage. Wave two of bioterrorism is this self-injection of these novel vaccines, which is turning out to be a disaster. And people are really running for the hills from these vaccines. And the vaccines within a few short months have been weaponized as a sociological weapon, something we've never seen before. It's interesting because the stakeholders themselves in the United States, that would be the CDC, the NIH, and the FDA, they've already said they're not taking the vaccine themselves. Very interesting. We have universities where they are demanding that our college students, we have 20 million US college students, they're demanding that the college students take the vaccines, but the professors say they're not taking it themselves. It's the most interesting thing how the vaccine, in a sense, has been weaponized as to be put on somebody other than ourselves so we can somehow make them take the risk so we could benefit from this group immunity. It's been the most awful things. We're seeing families turn on each other where the families say, listen, you can't come and visit unless you've had the vaccine. We've had work group meetings. I've gotten some emails from people saying, well, I'm fully vaccinated and we can't get together until everybody's fully vaccinated. And we've seen just a behavior that's crazy. For instance, part of the crazy behavior is not recognizing natural immunity. So every single bit of science and observational data suggests natural immunity is far superior to vaccine immunity. You can't get the virus twice. Once you've had it, you're done. It's one and done. And there are no cases of people getting sick over and over again. We would have seen it going through the nursing homes over and over again. It kind of swept through the nursing homes in the United States and it's done. It's one and done. And no one seems to want to recognize natural immunity. It's so crazy in Texas, we actually had to have an executive order from our governor to say, listen, people have natural immunity, we're going to recognize it. And we can't have prejudice based on the vaccine or coercion. And we can't require the vaccine for state institutions. We actually had to put a state law in place, and we just recently had one for the private employers. But we've seen people run with this, with the private employers telling people, listen, they must take the vaccine. Qantas Airlines was one of the very first entities to say, we're going to require the vaccine. That was before the vaccine was even proven. That was before it was even out there. We had two major pharmacy chains in the United States, CVS and Walgreens, say, we're proud to offer the vaccine. That was before it was even finishing development. That's actually illegal in the United States. We have truth in advertising laws and U.S. cosmetic and drug advertising laws that say you can't advertise for a product that doesn't exist. I bet there are laws in Australia to say that you can't require a vaccine before it's even available. I mean, these types of things, I get hundreds of emails per day of parents who are absolutely terrified of their kids taking the vaccine. They know that their kids can die with the vaccine, but yet they want their kids to go to college. I mean, it's such an incredibly difficult time. And I'll ask the parents, does the college have a policy that says that a child has to get the vaccine? And do they have a fair exemption process? Because we know certain people who have vaccine risks can't take it. We know that COVID recovered patients, they have higher vaccine reaction risk. They can't take it. We know that pregnant women can't take it because it probably causes loss of the baby. We know women of childbearing potential, they can't take it because it may actually affect fertility. So we have all these groups that really can't take the virus. We have giant groups that can't take the vaccination. So we know they can't take it. And most of the parents will answer, well, no, the college doesn't have a policy. And then we say, well, if they don't have a policy, that's called intimidation. Why don't you file a complaint called intimidation? They might as well say that you have to, you know, dye your hair a certain color to show up to college. That's intimidation. What Qantas Airlines is doing is intimidation. How can we take a vaccine, Pete, and use it as a weapon, a sociologic weapon to intimidate one another?
Qantas, or the CEO of Qantas, Alan Joyce, he visited the World Economic Forum recently with Klaus Schwab. So that might give you an understanding of that group of individuals. The two last questions, if you don't mind, Peter, is, and this might be a conspiracy or vaccine shedding in relation to these vaccines, because I bumped into an old friend the other day. I had my surfboard. I was going down to the beach, going for a surf, and I bumped into this guy that I hadn't seen for a while, and he didn't look well, but I gave him a hug because that's how I greet people. I always give him a hug and said, how you doing, mate? He goes, oh, I feel like shit, mate. I just had the COVID vaccine yesterday. And I'd heard these stories about vaccine shedders. I jumped. And I'm not a person to be in fear of anything, but I actually I jumped. I'm like, what did you do that for? And his response straight away was, I need to travel. I said, yeah, but you're not allowed to travel just yet anyway. So why are you getting the vaccine? He goes, oh, just for when they do open the borders so I can travel again. And I said, have a great day. And I jumped in the ocean and washed myself as vigorously as I could under the waves. But is there any concern for this notion of vaccine shedding when it comes to this vaccine, or is that a conspiracy?
Well, I mentioned this rap song that's really popular in the United States, RC Rapper, and it's called Just Say No. And he's got some great rhymes. And I encourage anybody to go to YouTube, go to RC Rapper, Just Say No, especially for your young audience. You, Pete, you look like kind of a young surfer there in Australia, kind of a cool guy. And anyhow, what he says is, he goes, it's not a conspiracy theory if it keeps coming true. He basically makes a good point. You know, we keep talking about conspiracy theories, but when I said weapon of bioterrorism, it kind of came true. Everything I'm talking about, it kind of came true. And so for shedding, the spike protein, which literally in the last 2 weeks, we found out from a study from Harvard by the first authors, Ogata, that this spike protein, this bioterrorism weapon, circulates in the body. So when you saw your friend, he was in the throes of internal bioterrorism from the Wuhan spike protein that was circulating in his body in an uncontrolled fashion, which is the scariest thing to think about biologically. And the thought is it a protein like any other protein? Can it come out in the sweat? Can it come out in the tears or in the saliva or the urine secretions? And we don't know, obviously, but Pfizer, in its protocol, is very interesting. Pfizer excluded pregnant women, women of childbearing potential. So it's interesting how the manufacturers knew it shouldn't be used in pregnant women and childbearing potential. And it's really irresponsible that anybody would inject a pregnant woman, and irresponsible for a pregnant woman to let herself get injected, quite honestly. But Pfizer wanted to know in their protocol, if it was a man and the wife was pregnant, they wanted to know a lot about the wife, and especially contact with the wife and one another. This idea of suggesting shedding, there had been some veterinary studies about 10 or 15 years ago trying to come up with an idea of injecting one animal and have the protein spread to other animals. It's not far-fetched, to be honest with you, and cause immunity. The spike protein, you know, if you could form immunity to it, that'd be kind of a neat thing if it did spread. But there's been a report, at least one, and this was presented to America through the news by Dr. Harvey Risch when I was actually on TV with him, where there was a pregnant woman who was vaccinated with Pfizer and Moderna, and she was breastfeeding. And about 2 days after the vaccine, she breastfed and it killed the baby. And the baby died of a blood disorder. It looked like the spike protein went right into the baby and killed the baby. So that could be the most direct example of shedding through breast milk. So I don't know what to tell patients right now. The vaccine manufacturers have obviously not come clean on safety whatsoever. So what I'm telling people who get vaccinated is, at least from the Ogata paper, it circulates for 2 weeks. I'm telling the family members, listen, no sexual intercourse, no kissing, no close contact until you get through the first 2 weeks of the first shot. The second shot with Pfizer Moderna, there's already antibodies, so it looks like it squashes the spike protein down. It's not measured in the circulation. But this is such a big deal, Pete, that once we found out literally 2 weeks ago that the spike protein circulates in the blood unbridled, that meant that actually if somebody happened to donate blood in a blood drive, that they contaminated the donated blood. And so we called the blood bank because it was a transfusion reaction at my center. And somebody brought this to my attention. I called pathology. We made a bunch of emergency calls. We found out that the blood banking programs do not screen out people who've gotten the vaccine for any period of time. Mm-hmm. So now we have emergency letters off to the American Association of Blood Banking, the American Red Cross, saying, listen, we think we've got the entire U.S. blood supply contaminated with spike protein, which, you know, obviously can be lethal. So like I said, this vaccine program is the biggest botched effort that we can ever imagine. It's absolutely botched beyond belief. Let me give you another example. We knew Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, AstraZeneca, they knew COVID recovered could not get the illness again. They excluded them from the clinical trials. But yet the regulatory authorities said, you know what, vaccinate everybody. And Qantas Airlines, everybody else said, no, let's not give COVID recovered any credit for anything. Unless they get the vaccine, they don't get any credit. Well, there's 3 studies showing that COVID-recovered people have much higher rates of vaccine reactions or side effects. And so in the safety database, the VAERS, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, of which I've had to do some entries myself, do you know there's no drop-down box to see if somebody is COVID-recovered or naturally immune? So our CDC has no idea, and your TGA has no idea who's naturally immune and who isn't. And maybe it's those individuals who are having all the side effects. It would make a lot of sense because the body's already primed for this and we could be reactogenic. It is honestly, when you look at this, the failure to treat, the failure to frontline doctors who are experienced in taking care of patients, to have government officials that can't frame the problem. You have media doctors who have never seen a patient, government officials and government doctors who haven't seen a patient. The politicization of certain drugs, and now the entire botched worldwide mass vaccination program. It's just blunder after blunder after blunder. And to highlight this, Australians would be fascinated to learn that there is a millionaire in the United States, Steve Kirsch. Steve basically said this, if anybody can find anything that the CDC, the FDA, the NIH, the World Health Organization, if you can say anything that they've done correct or right in pandemic response, he says, I'll pay you $2 million. Challenge. Show me one thing that they've done correctly. And no one came forward.
I want to finish off with your oath that you took, however many years ago that was, and if you remember, and if you can explain to the listeners and viewers why it is you do what you do.
Doctors, and really in a sense, everyone in healthcare takes what's called the Hippocratic Oath. And the Hippocratic Oath says that the doctor or the healthcare provider with the patient, that circle is the supreme priority. It is the priority. And it's a relationship. It's called the fiduciary relationship. And the fiduciary relationship says, I'll just use the term doctor, that the doctor will always put his or her effort in the best interest of the patient. Always, always. And it is a relationship of beneficence, meaning that the doctor will find what is the most beneficial approach or advice to recommend to that person. It's very, very important. The Hippocratic Oath says that. And it's been said in medicine that that we cure patients very rarely. We only help them sometimes, but we always care about them. And I've made a big deal in COVID-19 that the Hippocratic Oath has been broken. I upheld it. I can look myself in the mirror and say, I tried to help every patient in the best of my ability from the very beginning. Everything from how to treat them with COVID-19 and calling them and caring about them and follow-up, and how to guide them on the vaccine. I'm using the Hippocratic Oath in my best judgment. We have seen from the start of this pandemic, doctors who don't try to help patients and they suffer at home, they get in the hospital and die. We've seen doctors not help people in the hospital. We've had these dramatic cases where the patients cry for the doctors to try to give some medicine like ivermectin to help the patients, and the doctors refuse. And the patients have to go to a court and they get a judge to order the doctors in the hospital to give the patients medicine. We've never seen this in our life. And now we've had the menace of this vaccine, which started out looking pretty good. I was behind it. I was recommending it. And once we started to see how dangerous the vaccine was, many of us started to get really uncomfortable. And now I'm to the point where I just don't generally recommend it. And we have seen the Hippocratic Oath become broken and destroyed. We've seen doctors in fear get to the point where they're exercising nihilism, where they're actually intentionally not treating patients and promoting hospitalization and death. And now we're seeing the promotion of the vaccine, which is yet now looks like another wave of harm. It's possible that the vaccine may do more harm than good. It's very possible. At the rate of current deaths right now in Australia with COVID-19, I'll tell you this much, you're going to have more vaccine deaths than you have COVID deaths if you broadly apply the vaccine. I've always thought, you guys are just starting out with this, vaccination in a very limited band, the highest risk people who could get the virus, the highest risk workers, maybe nursing home workers, something like this, limited. United States, I thought maybe 20 million people should be vaccinated. Australia, maybe it's 2 million or a million. It's got to be narrow. And whatever you do, don't broadly apply the vaccine, because it's going to be based on risks and benefits. And you get a young person like you, Pete, you're going to be, it's going to be rare. You coming in contact with COVID, less than 1%. You ever getting really sick with COVID, way less than 1%. You can't do better than less than 1%. To try to give a vaccine for a less than 1% is not worth it. Even though the side effects are rare of the vaccine, who wants to take that gamble? Especially since it's unproven. We don't know if the vaccine's the right dose, the right technology. We don't know if it works short. We don't know what we know if the short-term hazards are. They look terrible. We don't know what the long-term hazards are. And now this commitment of the booster, it just right now, there just doesn't look like there's any good news in the vaccine.
Well, it seems in Australia over the last week, our Prime Minister has talked about that we won't be able to travel between states until we get the vaccine, interstate travel. And looking at the mainstream news over the last few days, they are encouraging 20 to 30-year-olds, even today, this was in our main newspaper, there's the headline, the number one story in there is this opinion piece, how the 20 to 30-year-olds should be getting vaccinated. And yesterday it was the 50-year-old women, and they had a beautiful story about how now the 50-year-old females are getting together to encourage each other to get vaccinated because it's the right thing to do. So every single day this week, there has been in our mainstream newspapers these stories of coercion, manipulation, and they're targeting different groups every single day to get this message out. And I'm finding it fascinating watching this play out in real time, because every day it seems like they're doubling down stronger, harder, quicker. And yeah, it's going to be very interesting watching this play out. And you said in that speech in the Senate, we have a crisis of compassion, I think it was. And I think we've got a crisis of something else at the moment.
Well, we've got, yeah, everybody taking the vaccine ought to ask themselves some questions. What have they just done to their body? What is this vaccine Is it genetic material? It is. All of them are genetic materials. Is it experimental, investigational genetic material? Yes. Does it code for a weapon of bioterrorism? Yes. What does it do in your body? Nobody knows. How long does it last in your body? Nobody knows. So for someone to say, listen, I'll take the vaccine because I want to travel. Boy, I have to tell you, that has to be one of the most careless decisions ever made. You know, there have been internet pictures of a pregnant woman saying, oh, I'm pregnant. I'm not going to have half a glass of wine. I would never do anything to hurt my baby. And then she turns around and takes a shot of the genetic juice with the vaccine. It's like, wow, why don't you spin the dice with that one? You know what I mean? This is the type of thing people have to think what they're doing. I visited some family members, Pete, and reasonably sophisticated people, but they didn't talk to me, my brother and his daughters. His two daughters are childbearing age. They're just going to get married, start their families. They've even had COVID-19. They're completely immune. What did they do? They got the vaccine. They go, well, yeah, we got the vaccine. I said, well, how'd it go? Well, I got Pfizer or Moderna or what have you. Oh, yeah, I was sick as a dog for days in bed. Oh, that doesn't sound too good. And I said, well, what about now? Well, I don't know. I took the vaccine. I guess I can travel. Well, the issue is, what about fertility? Remember, women of childbearing potential, Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, AstraZeneca did not have in their research. They thought the vaccines could actually impair fertility. That's the reason why they excluded them. Of course they did. The Moderna application to the EMA showed the vaccine dropped fertility by 16%. That's actually a big number in the animal studies. 25% would have been a no-go to even have the vaccine go forward. The Japanese released the data from Pfizer. The lipid nanoparticles of the Pfizer vaccine localize in the female ovary. And while all the organs wash the lipid particle out, the ovary is concentrated over 2 days. None of this looks good for fertility, Pete. The manufacturers don't include these women in the registrational trials. There's no way that any regulatory authority or any Qantas or any airline could ever ask a woman of childbearing potential to take the vaccine. That is unethical. That is wrong. It's immoral on a civil perspective. It's illegal. Illegal. This is important. I was on Tucker Carlson. He was looking at me like you're looking at me right now. Tucker Carlson started to go wild. He goes, what do you mean? I said, listen, immoral, unethical, and a civil perspective, illegal. Now, illegal is important. This is an important word. Because if a regulatory agency forces something on someone else to travel or to work or go to school, and that instrument that's forced on the individual, in this case, an injection of genetic material, causes harm, you know what that is? That's personal injury. That's not liability. That's personal injury. Because the person didn't want it to begin with. You might as well have taken them and stabbed them with a knife. That's personal injury. This is coming up in a big court case in Houston Methodist Hospital, where they're basically forcing the employees to get the vaccine. There's some women, 90% of the people don't want to take it are childbearing women. They're saying, listen, I don't want to take it. It's, here are all the reasons. I'm trying to get pregnant. I could be pregnant, what have you. And we are basically, going to make the case that that's attempted personal injury. And personal injury from a civil perspective is pretty strong. If Qantas is going to actually personally injure someone, those are going to be big lawsuits for Qantas. And they may have a big pocket to pay out these cases because it's going to fall right onto them. It's not liability. It's not immunity liability. It's personal injury.
Yeah, what I find fascinating about all of this is the government generally ends up helping these airline businesses for some reason. They like to pay them some taxpayer money to keep them afloat. So when these lawsuits come out against whoever it may be, Qantas, an employee, maybe the government, I mean, who's actually going to be footing the bill at the end of the day? Really?
Well, what it boils down to is what I realized is I said something's really going wrong in the world. We can't publish our papers anymore. We can't have any fair balance with risks and benefits of medical products. We got the trusted news service. We got social media. We got everything going wrong right now. The only thing we can do is what we're doing right now, Pete, is we take it to the people. And it's going to be the will of the people. If the will of the people say, listen, take this vaccine and shove it, the vaccine's going nowhere. The vaccine is going nowhere. And I do think the vaccine is the line, and it's going to be the will of the people. There are other parts of the pandemic which we could talk about where we've gone from free societies to somehow this fear-driven totalitarian society. The one that hits me is Canada. So Canada is our neighbor. My wife's Canadian. Her parents are there. We haven't seen them in a year. They've been in lockdown for over a year. It's been awful. And we're told at the Canadian border, we have to stay there for 2 weeks in a government-assigned hotel, pay the government $2,000, and then be subject to these random tests. And we know COVID-19 tests in asymptomatic people, that's not even approved by any regulatory agency. All it does is generate false positive test results. So we're going to be, according to a government intimidation tactic, basically, told to stay in the hotel. Well, you know what's happened, Pete? There's been 3,000 people say, okay, you're going to make me go to the hotel? Good, I'll scoot in the parking lot, get in my car, and get the hell out of here. And they say, go find me. And they just go about their business in Canada and get out. So listen, try to send me a fine. And Canada's trying to chase them down. We're going to fine you $3,000. You're like, good luck. So it's going to be the will of the people. And I think there's going to be people who show up on campus at colleges and say, forget it. I didn't take the vaccine. You can't do anything about it. We have, again, if policies don't exist that are vetted in big organizations that actually should have policies. And hospitals, for instance, hospitals have policy libraries. And those policies have to be approved by the Joint Commission for Hospital Accreditation. These hospitals that are threatening workers with the vaccine, they don't even have policies. So a threat without a policy, that's called intimidation or harassment. Every single one of these entities has offices that actually take complaints over harassment. They must open a file, what have you. So when all these parents are contacting me, I said, listen, file. This is called intimidation and harassment. It's going to be the will of the people. And I do think for some reason, the line is the vaccine. And it's not a hard line to join, to grab onto. It looks like the vaccine doesn't work and it doesn't look like it's safe. None of them look like they do. So it's not a hard line to grab. Some people would say, listen, I want to fight about masks and I want to make masks to be my signature point. And I look at it, you know what? If someone tells me to wear a mask, I'll wear a mask. It's just not my signature issue. It's not a big deal. I'm not terribly handsome anyway. So like, what does it matter? Pretty woman, it may be a big deal, but for me, wearing a mask is not my signature deal. If someone says, oh, you must use hand sanitizer, that's not a big deal. Social distance, not a big deal. But let me tell you, an injection of experimental material in my body that codes for a weapon of bioterrorism that's led to 5,000 dead Americans, and our estimate is that's tenfold underreported. We could have 50,000 or 100,000 dead Americans. We could have 100,000 dead Europeans at the hands of the vaccine, and then a host of neurologic damage, heart attacks and strokes. Who knows what's going to come out of these vaccines? You know what, Pete? That is the line. That is the line. And you know, in some countries in Europe and in Indonesia and in Southeast Asia, they have already laid the groundwork for forcible vaccination. Forcible. That means that somebody's going to come, some big guy is going to wrestle you to the ground and they're going to jab you with the vaccine. So there's something going on. And the vaccine cartel or cabal, when they say they want a needle in every arm, they're serious. This is a very serious moniker, a needle in every arm. The will of the people, in my view, needs to break this. We need to break a needle with every arm. No, it's not going to be a needle. And when that's broken, then we'll actually see what conspiracy is behind it. It's not up to you and I to conjecture, but there is something behind this needle in every arm. I don't think it's COVID. I don't think it's related to COVID. You have hardly any COVID in Australia. You could easily treat the cases that come up. There's no reason to impair driving across your states in Australia based on COVID. Everyone knows that. There's no reason for you to be in lockdown because of COVID. So it can't be about COVID. It must be about something else. But all roads lead to the vaccine. For all the investigative reporters, all the people interested in a great mystery novel or a great science fiction novel, I tell them, you know what? Study this vaccine. All roads lead to the vaccine. People want this vaccine in every arm. You know, in the United States, we don't have any panels of doctors. We don't have any peer review. Now, we have one doctor calling the shots. One doctor. It looks like he was involved in the creation of the weapon of bioterrorism, and he's now involved in the execution of the vaccine program. The same guy. And he was on last night saying, listen, we need to vaccinate kids who are 6 months old. We're saying, what? This kid's 6 months old, don't get this thing. So most of us have arrived at the fact, Pete, that the vaccine can't be about COVID. It must be about something else. And so the million-dollar mystery question is, what is the vaccine really about? And the only way we think we're going to know is to break the moniker of a needle in every arm and get a big block of people that aren't going to take it. They're just not going to take it.
Peter, what a fascinating, scary, enlightening, positive, shit, what the fuck is going on conversation for my Sunday morning here as the sun's coming up. I think I'm going to go have a surf, just like I did after I met the guy that just had the vaccine, to have a cleanse and to regroup. I look forward to sharing this with everybody, and thank you for being you. I love you, my friend, and I really appreciate you spending a couple of hours of your very valuable time with me, a scruffy surfer guy from Australia that likes to share a little bit of information. Let's connect again in 6 months' time, and hopefully you'll have that answer as to the why.
Let's do it, Pete. Thanks so much for having me.
Cheers, brother. Love you.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.